The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KLAY or those who advertise their products or services on this station.
Welcome to Ask an Atheist, where reason is our co-pilot. My name is Beth Lehman, and I'll be hosting today. With me, I have two of my favorite hosts of the show. I have Rich Lyons.
Greetings.
And I have Libby Mistretta.
Well, hello there.
Well, hello to you. I haven't hosted with either one of you, so I'm very excited about this.
It's a first for all three of us.
Yeah. This is a new experience.
We need to get BFF rings after we're done.
I think you're
awesome.
Right.
Yeah, already done, actually.
Purity rings.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't want to lie. But so we're going to kick off the show. Usually we talk about the countdown to backpedaling, but because of the recent events in Japan, we thought that we would take a minute to sort of touch on that and talk about it.
You know, there's no other way to describe this than a cataclysmic event. I mean, it is huge.
Yeah.
8.9 earthquake. Right now they're saying as many as 10,000 people dead. Hundreds of thousands are... unable to find food, water. I mean, it is, and this is in a very civilized area. It's not like Haiti. It's not like some of the other areas where this happened. So it is a horrific event. And one of the things I wanted to point out is that I have seen so many people saying things like, this is evidence of the end times approaching.
Oh, yeah. I hear that a lot.
Yeah. You know, pray for the people in Japan. And number one, earthquakes happen. You know, if you're just going to say it is evidence of the end times approaching, then or try to tie some supernatural thing to it, then you have to ascribe meaning. Then you have to put yourself in the Pat Roberts shoes of saying, you know, what did the people of Japan
right.
do that brought this thing on? Or, you know, you have to interpret the event. That is a huge waste of time.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, for sure.
I think what needs to be, people need to help. And right now, the best way we can do that is by giving our money.
Yeah, that's going to be what's actually going to do the most good for the people who are in need.
Right. I think that prayer is, for those who believe in prayer, an interesting exercise. But as far as accomplishing anything to help these people, it obviously isn't. As Beth said, God already knew about it.
Yeah, exactly. I think that that's the thing that confuses me, is that why would people need to pray for the people of Japan, where if you already believe in some sort of deity that has control over what's going on, wouldn't that be the thing that created the earthquake in the first place?
Exactly.
Right. And certainly I can understand how praying may make the person who's praying feel better and feel a sense of comfort, or like they're making some kind of sense out of this really tragic, awful event. But you really, if you want to help the people in Japan who need the help, you've got to do something besides just pray. It's not going to cut the mustard.
And one of the things that I've seen is people actually excited because they feel like it's bringing forth Armageddon, bringing the end of...
I know. That's such an upsetting mindset to me. I don't even know how to deal with that when I encounter it. It's like 10,000 people and probably more died, and so many people lost everything they have. How can you find anything to be happy about in this? Whatever your beliefs are, it's awful.
It's a horrific event. And you know, I totally know 5, 6, 7, well, better been 7 years ago now, if I were still behind the pulpit, I would totally be preaching out of Revelation, totally be talking the earthquake scriptures and how all of that. But I've grown a little bit, and I do have some answers for what people can do. If you go to SeattleAtheist.org, they have a list of secular organizations that are providing relief to the area, and you can donate money. And even some of those organizations, if you are in a situation where you can donate time, effort, if you can help box things, you can actually give some of your time and your effort to helping find a solution to providing real aid to people.
And I would definitely, yeah, if you want to really help, then go ahead and go to that website, or go to, you can even go to the Red Cross website. They even have numbers that you can text that will automatically send $10, $5 donations to help. Those are the sort of things that I think that we should be focusing on if we really want to help the people of Japan through this horrific event. We actually have a call on the line. We have Izzy from Seattle, and evidently there are some things wrong with the way we have countdown to backpedaling set up. So why don't we go ahead and take Izzy? Are you there?
I am.
Hey, well, what's going on?
It's not something wrong with the way you've got it set up. It's something wrong with the conclusions you came to with the caller on the previous episode. I think the caller's name was Donovan. No, you actually talked about it with two people, Donovan and Matt.
Yeah, okay.
I actually don't know who the hosts are. I missed the intro. I think I heard Rich's voice.
Yes.
Yeah, Rich is here, yes.
I'm here.
It's the
Libby is here, and also Beth.
Yep, Rich, okay. Libby, and Beth.
Okay, so Libby was the only one that was on the call from last time.
Right.
But the consensus at the end, after talking about you were worried about these people who were giving up their livelihood and such to go out in these RVs and
yeah,
know,
yeah,
about
I remember
the
that.
World.
Mm-hmm.
But then you came to this kind of odd conclusion that, well, these people must just be crazy wackaloons out there on the very edge, and that there's a very, very small number of people that believe these sort of things.
I'm sorry you got that impression from what I said, because that's definitely not what I think about the people who are doing this. I'm genuinely concerned about all these people, about their mental health, and about what's going to happen after Jesus fails to appear. If these people have given up everything that they have and have put themselves into a situation where they've removed their own support system, their own familiarity, they've sold their homes, they've in some cases left their families behind, and they've started traveling around, you know, to follow this weird prophecy, I am concerned about them. What's going to be their coping mechanism when the prophecy fails to materialize?
Right, and it is regrettable that their beliefs have led them to do this, which is, that, again, weird prophecy. I think Rich sitting there, he knows that the prophecies about the end of the world are actually a pretty big part of Christianity.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I know, I know, believe me.
Evangelical Christianity.
Yeah, I hear you there.
I wanted to share some information with you. If you probably recall the previous presidential election, a lot of people were talking about, oh, is Obama the Antichrist? He might be the Antichrist. Oh, I'm not saying he's the Antichrist, but
yeah,
some people might think he's that kind
mean,
of...
Yeah, exactly. Nudge, yeah. Nudge.
Remember that? Well, here's the thing. The Antichrist is a figure of prophecy that is tied into the end of the world. The people that believe that Obama is the Antichrist, and I believe a Rasmussen poll put it at something like 19% of conservatives. If you just do a quick estimate, half of people in America call themselves conservatives. 19%, that's about a fifth. So, about 1 in 10 people think that Obama is the Antichrist, 1 in 10 Americans. That would mean that about 1 in 10 people in the country think the world is ending right now.
Oh, I have no doubt in my mind about that, Izzy.
It's going to lead to the Battle of Armageddon.
Izzy, I know. Hold on. Let me address your question, please, or your statements.
Sure.
I completely understand what you're saying about that. Rich is not the only one who comes from an end times focused background. I was raised in a very traditional Mormon family, and the whole thing with the Latter Day Saints is that they take that Latter Day part very seriously. I was raised to believe that we were literally living in the end times, that Jesus was going to come back any second now, and that not only people who are specially approved by God can receive prophecy, but everyone can receive prophecy. So everyone in my family, on the very religious side of the family, was going around spouting all kinds of prophecies and deciding that this or that political event was a sign that was foretelling the end times. And you know what? Actually, when I was growing up, my family believed that George Bush, the senior George Bush, was the Antichrist, and they had all kinds of prophecies and you know, revelations they could point to that outline that. So I'm very familiar with that mindset, and I still say that even though that end time prophecy thing is a big part of some sects of Christianity, I still worry for those people, even though they believe it and they believe it to be true. When it fails to happen, they're just human like the rest of us. What's going to happen to their mindset when it all comes crashing down? That's a very human problem, and I'm concerned for them as individual people.
Well, absolutely. There's a whole bunch of reasons to be concerned about this mindset. I mean, Rich probably knows it. The these family radio people are getting a lot of flack from other conservative Christians about having picked a date. That's not a common tactic with the prophesying of the end times.
Right. Well, people probably discovered a long time ago that you end up looking like a goofball if you pick a specific date because it never ends up happening.
Yeah, exactly. I think that the reluctance to pick a date has less to do with there being some sort of rule and has more to do with not looking silly because of previous attempts. The end of the world has happened, I don't know how many times, but quite a few.
No, yeah.
So
by now,
the
way to count it.
Yeah, yeah, what you're looking at is you're looking at an evolution of handling this phenomenon. Sorry, what did you say?
I said in Christian theology, the end of the world has been imminent for the last 1,900 years.
Yeah, right. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, ever since Jesus said the one standing here will see it. I mean,
yeah.
He kind of missed it.
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling, Izzy. We really appreciate your call.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you very much. What we're going to do now, we're going to actually shift gears, and we're going to talk a little bit about this exciting development in Oregon. And this actually ties into our topic today, which has to do with parenting with non-belief.
Yes, so. I'm so excited to this. And speaking of how praying isn't gonna maybe achieve the desired effects, like we were talking about earlier with the situation in Japan, this is an article from the Oregonian. We just saw this today, right? Or was it yesterday?
I believe it was. It must have been yesterday.
Yeah, I believe it was Sunday. So here we go. The Oregon House approved a bill Thursday that would remove legal protection for parents who choose faith healing over medical intervention when treating their children. Oh, I'm so,
yeah,
so relieved.
Everybody can do a Yahoo really quick if
Yahoo.
You like. Yahoo!
Yahoo!
All right.
The bill passed unanimously, though two Republican representatives raised concerns that that the legislation was taking the issue away from juries and sending the state down a slippery slope. The legislation comes in response to an Oregon City church, the Followers of Christ, that has a long history of child deaths, even though the conditions from which the children died were medically treatable. Currently, spiritual treatment can be used as a defense against some homicide charges. The bill would eliminate that defense and subject parents who choose faith healing over medical treatment at the expense of their child's life to mandatory sentencing under Measure 11. And we have a quote here from Democratic Representative Carolyn Tomei. She says, in the past 2 years, two children have died and another has been severely disfigured due to lack of medical care. These children suffered needlessly. Their deaths were avoidable. The bill gained the support of several groups, including the Christian Science Church, and passed through legislative committee with unanimous support. Although Representative Jim Widener, who is a Republican, said he worried that, quote, we might be heading down a slippery slope, unquote. He said he prayed earlier in the day about his son's severe tonsillitis. His wife took his son to the doctor Thursday morning, he added, but am I going to prison because I took the time to pray with my child? And Tomei kind of rebutted that by saying, colleagues, this bill is not written to send anyone to prison. Our hope is that we're sending a certain group of people a message that it's against the law if their child is in grave danger to not give them medical care.
Right. Well, and how ridiculous to say that waiting a day when your child has symptoms of tonsillitis because you chose to pray is in any way analogous to someone allowing their child to die from a treatable illness.
Right, I believe we've covered the Followers of Christ Church and the deaths of children in Oregon before on our show back in the Scan TV days, and I believe one of the children died from diabetes, which was like a protracted, unpleasant, long death.
Long term, yeah.
Yeah, so all I can say is thank you, Oregon, and good on you for finally addressing this.
And I know that in Oregon, one of the reasons why I believe that this bill gained traction was because there was a family who had a child who died, and they had another child who had died of, I think, a very similar illness a few years before then. And so because there was this repetitive occurrence in one family, that's what kind of pushed it into the limelight. If I'm remembering correctly, I don't have it right in front of me. But it's sad to me that multiple children of one family had to die before people address the fact that this is ridiculous. You have the right to believe, but you can't torture your child because you've chosen to believe something. I don't understand how anyone... I don't know what the slippery slope is.
I was going to go right to that. How on earth is not letting children die considered a slippery slope? That's
the article doesn't really go into depth about that, but my guess is probably the slippery slope is are we taking away, or is Oregon taking away people's right to pray, which of course is that's a ridiculous conflation from what this article is actually speaking to. Oregon has just finally put its foot down and said, you know, the welfare of children comes before the religious rights of the parents, period. And that's as exactly as it should be.
Sure.
Well, yeah, I believe what I always found great about this country was that we're really focused on individualism, we're really focused on rights, but we also have that understanding that you have rights up until your rights infringe on the rights of someone else.
Right.
And this is the case where, yes, you know, there's a lot of respect for parental choices. I'm a parent. I understand not wanting people getting in your business or whatever when it comes to parenting. But when you're making choices that's causing the death of your child, that's the point, I think, where we need to collectively say, okay, you know, this is where it's time to say, no, you don't get to make these decisions. You need help. And I think that that's kind of how I approach these people is I don't think that they're terrible. I think that they're terrible people, but I think that they're terrible people sort of accidentally. Yeah, I know. That sounds awful. I think that they're terrible parents, but I don't think that it's something that they're doing on purpose. I think that they honestly believe that they're making the best possible choices for their children.
Sure they are. Yeah.
But I think that it's easy to see from an outside perspective how you can have those beliefs to an extent, but after that extent, it's just not going to fly because are we not going to protect these kids?
Yeah, exactly. This is exactly what was needed in this situation because we were all, meaning the people involved with our show here, and I'm sure everyone else too, was becoming increasingly alarmed by all of the reports of children suffering and dying in Oregon just because of this faith healing practice. Like, finally, Oregon drew a very, very clear line in the sand, and that's exactly what needed to happen. We needed that. So thank you, Oregon. I appreciate your efforts.
And if anybody has any comments about what we've touched on so far or throughout the show, please don't hesitate to give us a call. The phone number here is 253-584-1480, or if you're a little phone shy, which I personally am, you can go to the website. It's askanatheist.tv, and there is a big red button that you can hit, and it'll send you to a form to send us a question. Later on, after the break, actually, we're going to go ahead and head into our topic, which is atheism and parenting.
Yeah.
So we will be right back with that, and hopefully we will have your attention still.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an integral part of your business. But that's not all. We can set you up with VoIP, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to helping your business succeed through and with technology. At Tacoma Telematics, we are committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
Join the Ask an Atheist after party at Doyle's Public House. The Ask an Atheist crew will be there at 5 for good beers, food, and you're invited. You'll find a dozen beers on tap, including Stella, Guinness, Smithwick's Irish Ale, Twisted Thistle IPA, and Fuller's London Porter, as well as dozens of domestic and imported beers and bottles. Join us for Good Atheist Conversation and meet the crew today at 5 at Doyle's, 208 St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
Hello, and welcome back to Ask an Atheist. I'm your host today. My name is Beth Lehman. With me, I have Rich Lyons and Libby Mistretta.
Hello.
Hi.
And today the topic we're going to be talking about is atheism and parenting. And if you have any comments or questions for us, we have a couple of parents and we have someone who is really excited about the prospect of parenthood, certainly. and the phone number that you can reach us at is 253-584-1480. So I am an atheist and I'm a parent. I come from the background where I was raised by people without religion. So I don't have a lot of the same issues with or questions even about raising children being an atheist. I pretty much do, I think, what most people do as parents, which is draw on my own experiences and the choices that my parents made, pick out the ones that I thought were good and go with them, and address the ones that I thought were mistakes and try to avoid those mistakes myself. Rich?
My situation was different. I did all of my parenting while I was a pastor, a.k.a. cult leader. So I have a lot of regrets about the way I raised my daughter. Just a little bit of perspective, and she's getting married in July, and because of my current beliefs, I'm not giving her away. I am welcome at the wedding. I was told
I can
come. Oh,
that's good.
That's
good.
And I'm glad to be there, but I'm her dad, you know?
Yeah.
And we had Daddy Bub Day, which was because I was a pastor. Her nickname is Bub.
Yeah.
And because I was a pastor, we would take a day of the week that I could spring things free, and I belonged to her on that day. Every week there was a Daddy Bub Day. And we did everything. I have made Barbie clothes. I because she set the rules. It was her day. And we did that for years. And I was a good father. I think even my ex-wife would tell you, I was a good father.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I thought part of being a good father was indoctrinating my child in the things that I believed were true.
Right.
And now I see... I really, instead of indoctrination, wish I'd spent time teaching creative thought.
Yeah.
Logic. Yeah.
Critical thinking.
Critical thinking. How to approach a situation and think through the situation. How to, a child who can think, a child who has that rather than blind faith, can make good decisions on their own. And I think that should be entitled to make good decisions on their own. You know, I look over my shoulder and I think, I did a really good job of doing a really bad thing. and you get to the point. I mean, she's getting married. There's really not much influence I have at this point in life. You know, I'm the heretic. They think I'm a devil worshiper. I'm really not.
Yeah.
But because of the separation there, the biggest separation in the family is not the 3,000 miles between Seattle and Texas. It's mindset and things of that nature. So, I can't tell you the right way because from experience, but I can tell you the wrong way from experience. And that is trying to put that child in a closed environment. Mm-hmm. I mean, the group that I was in, we didn't let, people couldn't watch TV. You could only read Christian books. You couldn't listen to secular radio, only Christian music. And by forcing such a narrow vision of the world, I think we did an injustice to our children because they're not prepared for the world.
Well, do you think, and see, that's the main difference that I see with a lot of my choices as a parent and with choices that I see more religious people making. Whereas I, with my son, have a big emphasis on being independent. Obviously not now, he's 7, so he's not like getting a job or anything. But I teach him critical thinking skills and that sort of thing so that if he ever were in a situation at any point, he would have that independence and that ability to assess a situation and deal with it. And I'm not sure if religious parenting necessarily focuses on those same abilities. I think that there's a lot more of a focus on sort of existing as a community and existing with the help of others, which is a good thing too.
Right.
But in only teaching that sort of thing and not also focusing on independence and independence of thought as well, I feel like that's a big difference when you're talking about the differences between atheist and religious parenting.
Well, someone who's brought up from the get-go to believe in an unbelievable figure, God, Jesus Christ, whichever religion it is, an unprovable thing, and taught to have blind faith in that, not questioning. I mean, in the group I was in, you did not question. Questioning was wrong.
Yeah.
The fact that you even thought of a question shows you're impure in your heart.
Oh,
God. I mean,
sinner.
Yeah. So, but to ingrain that into somebody, you rob them of a right. I mean, it's your right to question.
Yeah, definitely.
Everything.
Yeah. I agree with that for sure.
And robbing someone of that right, you can't give it back.
Yeah. And I think that this is a good point. One of the number one questions I get as an openly atheist person who's also a parent is the Santa Claus question.
Oh, yes.
And this is a question that...
This will be fun.
This is a question that a lot of religious people will kind of throw out there as sort of a proof of hypocrisy. You know, you say that we shouldn't tell our kids these things, but yet look at you. You celebrate Christmas and you tell your kids that Santa Claus is real, or you perpetuate the idea of Santa Claus. How can you, you know, how are you not a hypocrite? And so when we're talking about trying to teach our kids critical thinking skills, that's the way that I deal with Santa. I come from a family that has always, Christmas is one of the biggest holidays that we celebrate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, big holiday. And my parents, you know, they did the Santa Claus thing, and I've done the Santa Claus thing with my kid. And the reason why I've done it is because, first and foremost, it's fun. It's fun to pretend.
Exactly.
It is fun.
And children love to pretend. That's one of the things, too, is that we grow up and we sort of realize a little bit more about how reality is, some more than others. And we sort of get this veneer we lose that magical sense that something like the belief in Santa Claus gives us. And so that's something, I'm not going to rob my kid of that. But also, I use it as a learning experience for him because he's 7 years old now. He's gotten to the age where I've been asked a couple times about Santa. And so instead of outright saying, oh, no, he exists, and if you don't believe in him, you don't get your presents, or which my mom actually, that's the way that they, this is a divergence. Yeah, I still actually have to believe in Santa to get my full Christmas booty, but that's okay. But with him, what I do is I turn it into a learning experience. I go, well, why would you ask me that question? What makes you doubt that Santa Claus exists?
Yeah, I think that's that's a good way to approach it. And like we already mentioned, I don't have kids, but I'm very involved in my family where we have I have a niece and a nephew who are both very young. And my sister, when she was pregnant with her first kid, she brought that up. She was like, I don't know whether I should do the Santa Claus thing or not. I'm not sure how I feel about that. And we talked about it a lot, and we both kind of came to the conclusion that, yeah, we should do Santa as a family. And we sort of... had that same sort of approach you have to it, where when the kids are old enough to ask about it, it's a really great time to introduce the concept of critical thinking to them, to say, well, what do you think? Could Santa be real? Could a guy really fly around the whole world in one night and give presents to everybody in the whole world? And, you know, what makes that plausible, or why is that not possible? It's a great way for them to examine what they've been told and determine for themselves whether it's something they can believe or not.
And it's an awesome experience as a parent, too, to sort of watch someone going through that process. And some of the questions, like my son, one of the questions he asked, which I thought was a really good question, was, well, what about people who have never heard of Santa?
Oh. Much like the what about people who've never heard of Jesus question.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of parallels.
I like your kid already.
That's a smart kid. You've done a good job.
Well, and then keep in mind also, you know, he's 7 years old. He still wonders about whether or not Megatron exists.
Right.
So do I, just to be fair.
I was the Scrooge. I told my kid there was no Santa Claus.
Well, yeah, but you were raising her in that ultra-fundamentalist, thou shalt have no gods before me, including Santa Claus.
Is that what it was? Is that the idolatry of Santa?
It was that it was a lie, and that I didn't want to lie to my child, and taught him not to lie. And here was my logic on it, if I can preach for about maybe that long. The logic on it was, about the time the kid learns to question Santa Claus, he also is starting to question things, the other things you teach him, like God, Jesus on the cross and things. And here we are teaching Santa Claus, and we're going to say, no, that part's not real, but the other part is.
Wow.
And here we've got the Easter Bunny, and we say, no, the Easter Bunny, really, that's really not chocolate under the Easter Bunny there. I mean, the Easter Bunny doesn't really lay eggs. But the bit about the cross, that is true. So I preached it from a perspective of not confusing the kid. I mean, you're going to be telling them two unbelievable stories at once and then telling them one's true and one's not. So
when you explain it that way, I mean, it does make a kind of sense from that perspective. I can see why, as a fundamentalist Christian parent, you took that tack. Yeah.
Yeah, it does make a lot of sense. If you, if anyone has any questions for us or comments on what we've talked about so far, the phone number is 253-584-1480, or you can go to askanatheist.tv and ask a question from there. So, I'm going to go into a little bit because I had what I consider a unique experience. I don't think that most religious people are like this, but I did have an experience when my son was about 5.5 years old. That sort of shows the worst case scenario, I think, of being an atheist parent and how it might be reacted to by people. I had woken up early. My son was playing outside and there was a neighbor that had come up, and I live on a street with lots of neighbors. It's an apartment complex, so you get to know a lot of different people. And you also don't get to know a lot of different people. And I had never seen this woman before. So that was one of the strangest things about the whole occurrence. But she came up to me and she asked me very nonchalantly, "Oh, your son plays with my daughter. I wanted to know if he could come with me to a..." She had a specific way of saying it, but it was basically to an event tomorrow morning. And it was Saturday. And I thought in my head, an event tomorrow morning? That would be Sunday morning. She's not talking about taking my kid to church, is she? And keeping in mind that I'd never met this woman before. This was the first interaction that we had had. I knew her kid, but I'd never talked to her. And so through sort of this painful and very awkward conversation, I sort of drug it out of her that, yeah, she was offering to take my son to church, and she wasn't inviting me. And that was another big part of it. He was welcome. I was not. And so we went through this conversation, and what ended up happening is I basically said, you know, if you think about it from my point of view, would you want me to take your daughter to some event that goes against the ideas that you have about life? Would you be okay with that, with the relationship that we have? And her response was horrified and no, and she ran off and I didn't really see her again. But what I was left with from that experience was, first of all, why would I let my son go with a stranger anywhere?
Yeah, that's kind of creepy.
I mean, at any point. So maybe she was crazy. Maybe she was just a crazy person with that, you know, sweet religious veneer. I don't know.
Maybe she was well taught.
That's true.
Says the guy who used to teach him to do that.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is there was sort of, because I've always been open about being an atheist, and I remember that there was this girl who was going through a lot of trouble with drug addiction, and I had told her, she'd asked me what church I went to, and I told her, I don't go to a church, I'm an atheist. And after that, everyone sort of found out. And it wasn't really an issue for most people, but this woman obviously felt like she had some sort of duty to try to save my son in spite of me. And right. I felt like the assumption with the whole interaction was that I'm an atheist. I must not care if someone just takes my son somewhere. I must have, you know, and just a lot of assumptions about me as a human and me as a parent.
Like somehow your parenting instincts are dulled down by the fact that you're an atheist or
yeah, exactly. As if atheism is some sort of drug and I'm all whacked out on it and won't, you know, notice that it's a ridiculous.
You're all strung out on Dawkins.
Yeah, man. Tie me off.
I think, though, a lot of what I'm also seeing here is her perspective, and it reminds me of my own, because I did teach people to do this. We ran buses, picking up kids whose parents didn't even know where they were going.
Oh, wow.
You know? And so, but if you kind of go back to the conversation we had earlier that Libby brought to us, here we are saying the state has the authority to prosecute parents who don't give medical care to their children. On the other hand, here you've got a parent who feels like it's just almost stepping into that same role, saying, you're not giving your child a spiritual upbringing, so I will. So they almost look at you with the same eyes that we look at the parents who are praying for their kids and not getting the medical treatment.
And that's a really good point. And the other thing that struck me as really strange about the whole interaction was that she didn't tell me that she would wanted to take him to church.
Oh, right? No. Wow. Not
I had
gonna
to dig
do
for
that.
It.
Not going to tell you that. No.
And that to me is, I don't know, it's still, like I said, it happened when he was about 5.5 years old, so it's been a while since that happened, but I'm still amazed. And that's something that I, as an atheist parent, I don't see myself ever approaching a religious parent with, you know, obviously with children, and saying, hey, would it be okay if I took your kids to, you know, the secular picnic or whatever?
Darwin Day.
Yeah, exactly. Darwin Day would be a perfect analogy. So that, in terms of personal experience being a parent and the sort of mentality that you may have to deal with, that's my story. Now, I think that I am lucky because the majority of my parenting has been done in the Pacific Northwest. Yeah. And this is a really atheist or non-believer friendly area.
That's true. Yeah.
I know that you are from Texas.
Oh, yeah.
And it has to be different there. I know for a fact it's different there because I was pregnant in Texas.
Oh.
And there were family fights about the christening and all of this stuff. And when I said, well, I'm not going to be doing it, I don't even know what that is.
Yeah.
At that time, I really didn't. And just the reaction of it was, oh, well, you're an unfit mother.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that is, I didn't know. I probably knew people who really didn't believe in God, but I didn't know anyone who would self-identify as an atheist until I moved to the Pacific Northwest. I spent 43 years in Texas. So, that's how intense it is in Texas. And you would be considered an unfit mother by, some people, certainly, because you're not providing for the spiritual well-being of your children. And, that kind of brings to another area of parenting that's interesting, because the Christian faith, just as we talked about the buses and the mom who wanted to take your kid, we also taught our kids how to witness to other kids. So there your kid is at daycare, or there your kid is at kindergarten, or even at public school, and all of a sudden you've got another kid in the class trying to tell your kid that they're going to hell. Or, I had one situation where a teacher called me as a pastor and said, will you please tell this little girl to quit telling me I'm going to hell because I wear makeup?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow.
We have to tone back on this, guys. But, but that is something that as an atheist, a parent needs to be aware of is, what are they telling my kids in school? Not just the teachers, because, public schools pretty well know where they have to draw the line.
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah.
Depending on where you are, yeah.
But when you've got kids, there are no boundaries.
Right, that's true. Kids, it's a different story when you just have all these children from different backgrounds interacting, which can be a really good thing for them culturally. It's healthy for them to learn about what other people believe and, that their friends have different outlooks on the world than they have. But on the other hand, it certainly does expose them to some interesting situations, such as, a friend telling you you're going to go to hell or otherwise.
Yeah, and I actually do have a story about my son and his experience at school with a little boy who was very, very religious and came from a religious background. But I'm going to go ahead. We're going to take a break right now. Again, if you have any questions, please give us a call, 253-584-1480. This is Ask an Atheist, and we'll see you soon.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an integral part of your business. But that's not all. We can set you up with VoIP, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to helping your business succeed through and with technology. At Tacoma Telematics, we are committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
Join the Ask an Atheist after party at Doyle's Public House. The Ask an Atheist crew will be there at 5 for good beers, food, and you're invited. You'll find a dozen beers on tap, including Stella, Guinness, Smithwick's Irish Ale, Twisted Thistle IPA, and Fuller's London Porter, as well as dozens of domestic and imported beers and bottles. Join us for Good Atheist Conversation and meet the crew today at 5 at Doyle's, 208 St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
Hello and welcome back. You're listening to Ask an Atheist. And I was going to go into a story about my son dealing with the difference between being a religious child and being an atheist child in school, or the children of religious people and the children of atheist people. Which
Thank
is
you for clarifying that.
Yeah,
that's
no,
my
that's
personal bugaboo.
It's a distinction that really bothers me. But actually, first, we have a caller, Ginny from Tacoma, and I guess she has a similar... Ginny, are you there?
I am.
You have a similar story about someone taking your child to the church?
Well, what happened was I also used to live in an apartment complex. My daughter is now 19, but at the time she was, I'd say, 5 or 6. And every Sunday afternoon, this van would pull up and pick up kids to go to this church.
Oh, Rich is turning red.
I never, you know, I was never a churchgoer. I know, personally, if her friend had invited her to go to a church, sure, she can go, you know.
Yeah, but, yeah, definitely,
because,
yeah.
You know, I know the parents, I know the kid. But this is just a van that would pull up to the apartment complex and pick up kids and take them to a church. And I never let my daughter go. And, you know, she,
good for you.
Yeah.
She came up to me. Well, you know, she's 5, 6 years old, and her friends are going, and why can't I go? And I said, because I don't know these people. You know, and that was enough for her. But then I had parents coming to me.
Oh,
who
wow.
lived in the apartment complex, saying, why don't you let, you know, Roxy go with you to the, or go with us to the church? And I said, well, she's not going with you. Strangers are pulling up in front of our complex and putting kids in a van and driving them off. And they looked at me like I was crazy, and they said, but it's a church.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, and man.
And your point is?
Yeah, no, exactly. And as a parent,
that was the end of the conversation, but I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't. I didn't grow up in a religious family, but I did go to churches with friends. And like I said, that would be perfectly acceptable to me if I knew the family. You know, it's
I can understand that point of view, sure.
I could not believe it.
No, and that's a really important distinction, too, is that if anyone I knew, if my sister is a religious person, if she had said, hey, you know, Tristan has been talking about Jesus or has been talking about church or whatever, could we take him with? I would totally be okay with that, because I think exposure to different ideas is a good thing. But when it's a stranger, or like you said, a van.
The van thing really surprises me. Don't we teach our kids not to get into vans with strangers?
Isn't it that seems kind of like, vans filling up with children is something that comes right before David Caruso taking his sunglasses off. Isn't that typical?
Yeah.
But thank you very much, Jenny. I appreciate
you
calling, because I haven't heard very many other people with a story. I think yours might top mine, actually, with the creepy van. But thank you.
Good for her for not letting her child.
Yeah, no kidding.
Very good.
Yeah. And so I want to rush in, because there's actually a couple things, and this is one of those topics that takes up a lot of time. One of the things I wanted to talk about was raising your kids to deal with conflict on their own. And it's really difficult when it's a religious conflict. And my son, and this was just last year with this boy in his class, the boy came from a very religious family. My son obviously comes from an irreligious family. And my son, for whatever reason, mentioned the fact that his mother doesn't believe in Jesus. And the boy, pretty much over the next few weeks, started to sort of tease him. My son came home crying one day because he said that, you know, this friend told him he was going to go to hell.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
And that's a really traumatic thing, I think, to tell anybody.
Yeah.
Eternal torture in flames, the most painful thing you can imagine.
Yeah.
No hope of it ever going away.
Hooray.
That's encouraging.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, Tristan's poor thought process, my son is named Tristan, of, well, if this horrible place exists and I'm going to go there, why would my mom be sending me there? Is she going to go there?
Aww.
You know, lots of really difficult questions. And the way that I dealt with it, if it had gotten any worse, I probably would have asked to do a conference and, you know, talk to the parents. But I ended up standing before going to pick my son up and having his parents come up and talk to me. And basically, we had this conversation where we're like, obviously, we believe in different things. Obviously, our children listen to our beliefs. What are we going to do about this? And we sort of decided to sort of let them figure it out as much as they can, as long as nobody was throwing punches or anything like that. Because there were, you know, my son had called him stupid. My son had called him childish. Different things that were really, really bad.
Well, yeah, they're 7.
And so the two boys ended up actually going through the process of talking about it and realizing that they were really good friends. And now it's not an issue between the two of them. And one of the things that I did with my son was I asked him, why do you have an opinion about this? I mean, what are you drawing from? Well, you said, well, why does it matter what I say? Well, I'm supposed to listen to you. Well, yes, you are supposed to listen to me, but this is something that you can decide for yourself. And it's something that takes a lot of time for a lot of people to really understand and to really make a decision about. And even after the decision is made, hopefully you'll always be open to additional information that can influence that decision. And so why are you, you know, a six-year-old kid talking about this at school with other kids? Why is it? And that sort of question, I think, helped him understand that, why are we talking about this? We are just saying what our parents say. We're parroting.
Well, yeah. Good for you for empowering your son in that way to realize that and to kind of start the process of his own critical thinking where religious belief is concerned. That's really cool.
Well, and the avoidance of victimhood, too.
Yeah.
I think that's a big thing. I really don't. I know that atheists are a minority in the United States. I feel like they're a marginalized minority in the United States. And I really don't want my son growing up with the mentality that comes along from being a marginalized minority, because I understand socially the negative impact that can have on a kid and their, you know, self-esteem and confidence.
Yeah, for sure. Good points.
One of the things I wanted to readdress, if we could kind of back up a little
bit.
You know, you mentioned that it would be okay for your kid to go to Sunday school if someone you knew would invite them. At what point would you draw the line? And here's where I'm working at. I can take you to people on my Facebook page today whose parents were not raised in the faith that I believed, but because they looked at us as their Sunday morning, get the kid out of the house so we can do what we want to do, service, they still believe that. They are still faithful to that belief. And in the process of just allowing someone they know to take their kid to Sunday school on Sundays, their children have been converted to something they're not.
Yeah. Wow.
And as a result, they've got problems in their family because the group I was a member of is very exclusive, very separatist, very much not mainstream Christian. So if you're mainstream and your kid is a cult member,
right,
you've lost your kid, you know?
Yeah.
And the same thing if you're atheist. And even if it's an innocuous appearing church, and I'm asking this as a question, where do you draw the line and say, okay, that's too far?
Well, I've thought about it myself because my son does show interest in the community aspect of church.
Mm-hmm. And it's a good thing, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. The different, you know, activities and stuff that churches tend to provide for people. The way that I plan on handling it, if it ever gets to that point, is that if he wants to go, the first time is fine. The second time, I'm going with him. And then that way I can assess what is going on in the church and whether or not I feel like it's the sort of environment that I want him to be in. Because like anything, no matter what, if it's religious or not, I don't want my son being exposed to people who are saying, think this way.
Right.
Do this. Because I don't think that that's a successful, you know, mindset to grow up in.
Right.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, I think that's a smart line to have drawn there that, you know, second time around, you're going to go along. And of course, because I know you, you're not going to be the type who's going to sit there and say, oh, don't believe any of this. You know, if he's really interested in exploring it, you're going to support that belief. But having a parent there to kind of make sure that nothing traumatic is being presented to your son.
Yeah, just somebody who, you know, you don't want to expose your children to anything negative, obviously, ever.
Yeah.
But it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But if you can be there to pull them out of it, if you see it getting too weird or whatever, if people are writhing or if they're, you know...
That wouldn't have been weird. That would have been a great service. What are you talking about?
No, sermon's complete without a little writhing.
Yeah. Frothing at the mouth, speaking in tongues.
Good times.
Dancing, yeah. But that's a good point. And I like your approach of using it as a teaching opportunity. You know, a seven-year-old kid, if someone's just spouting, this is the way it is, they're probably going to swallow that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if there's a parent saying, what do you think about this? What do they mean by, and teaching the kid to ask those questions.
Yeah.
You know, exposing them to it, sure, fine. But teaching them, don't just swallow, ask the questions. And right now, you may not have the questions to ask, so I'm going to ask you some questions in the process. And that way, the child is, number one, not accepting anything on blind faith, and number two, learning to question and how to question
things.
And to be respectful, because that's another thing. That was the one thing that really bothered me with my son's interaction with that other child, is that, yeah, the other kid was, you know, getting out of hand with the hell stuff, but my child was being disrespectful to him. And that's something that I worry about as, and I'm very vocal about my atheism, and I don't always look around and make sure that my son isn't there when I'm letting, you know, my opinions fly. And so I think it's really important for anybody, regardless of what you believe or what you don't believe or whatever, to really have these conversations with their kids so that they don't turn around and become a bully based solely on what you think, because your kids really respect you.
Right.
And they listen to what you say, and they think that you have all the answers.
Yes.
And so I think that every parent has that sort of responsibility to make sure that their kids aren't taking what they say, turning around, and using it to hurt someone else. When in reality, I don't think that, at 7 years old, I doubt, like I said, he's still considering whether or not Megatron is real. I don't think he has a clear grasp on the concept of God, let alone whether or not that being might exist.
Right.
Yeah.
One of the things, I know we're running out of time, but one of the things that I really wanted to talk about, because it's the main point that I get criticism on as a parent, is my unwillingness to allow my son to participate in certain groups that are seen as American traditions, such as the Boy Scouts.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate your standing up against that, honestly. I think that's great.
And I grew up in a rural area of Washington, Maple Valley, Washington. Boy Scouts, becoming an Eagle Scout, those were things that were really, really important to the community.
Everybody did that.
And there's absolutely no way. And there's no way. And if I'm going to be honest, my aversion to the Boy Scouts has less to do with the fact that they don't even want my son as a member, because I technically they don't allow atheists.
Right.
And they do have, you know, Christian messages in their speeches and stuff like that. But it's more the homosexuality thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest. I mean,
why would you want your child to be involved in a group that is so openly hostile toward a certain segment of people? I mean, what kind of values are you really teaching your child, along with how to make a fire and how to, you know, do whatever else Boy Scouts do. Help old ladies across the street. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I don't see the point. I don't think that it's okay to validate that sort of... And I know that there are Boy Scout troops that exist that ignore the anti-atheism stuff and ignore the anti-homosexuality stuff. I know that they exist. But when you put your kid in that within that organization, you're still, in a way, validating those talking points.
Yes.
And it's something that I absolutely, that is the opposite of what I want to teach my kid.
Yeah, you're basically giving your kind of seal of approval to the entire organization, at least in your child's eyes, and probably in the rest of the community's eyes, too. I do think it's important to point out, however, that the Girl Scouts of America are not affiliated with Boy Scouts of America.
Yes,
and they do not share the same viewpoints on atheists and homosexuals as the Boy Scouts do. They don't really care. So, yay for the Girl Scouts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so if I had a girl, it would be a little bit easier. But that is something that, because Boy Scouts, you know, it's an American tradition.
Yeah.
You know, every good man starts as a Boy Scout, that sort of thing. I get a lot of flack from people who don't even really know me.
And that's one of those things I think a lot of people don't even consider, that if you are the parent of a boy in America, you're going to get faced with that question. It's right up there with all the other weird questions you'd never think to be asked, that, you know, when you sign on to become a parent. Yeah, you end up having people ask, well, why isn't he in Boy Scouts?
Well. Yeah, as if he might have gotten kicked out because he's too much of a rebel. I don't know. But,
yeah,
And it's interesting to me to explain to people exactly why, and then have that reaction of, well, how can you impose what you think on your kid and keep him from having that great experience simply because of what you think?
That's exactly what the religious people are doing.
Exactly. That's completely my point.
Send your kid to Camp Quest instead. That place is awesome.
Yeah, you have some information on Camp Quest.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We got this little email thing about Camp Quest of Minnesota. So for those of you who listen to our podcast, maybe, and would be interested in sending your kids to a Camp Quest event, Camp Quest of Minnesota is having a mini camp event. And their press release says, join us for a fun-filled mini camp occurring one day only during the 2011 American Atheist Convention in Des Moines. That's going to be April 23rd from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. at the Embassy Suites. And ages 8 to 15, boys and girls, it costs $30, and it'll cover meals, activities, and field trips.
Wow, that is awesome.
Yeah, it says to bring a swimming suit, walking shoes, and a raincoat. But basically, if you don't know what Camp Quest is, it's essentially a summer camp, although they do these mini camp events too, where kids are taught to think critically and taught about skepticism. And children of you know, from any type of family are welcome. You know, Christian kids, religious kids can come along with atheist kids. It doesn't address religious issues. It only addresses critical thinking and how to be a problem solver and a smart thinker, which I think is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. I completely agree. And that's to touch on this with the little time that we have. That's one of the issues that I have as a parent, too, is finding a camp for my son, because that's another tradition. Wow. A lot of kids go to camp. And if you go to look, there are secular options for camp, but they are so outnumbered and outpriced a lot of the time by religious camps, religious options, that it's very overwhelming when you're trying to figure out some sort of activity for your kid to experience so that they can have that common experience with these other kids. But at the same time, you know, why would I send my kid to a religious camp?
Right. Right.
Well, I can give you a reason. I could give you lots of reasons.
I'm sure you could. Here's a counter reason. Religious right. camps are boring.
If you're not a member, we will pay for your child to go to religious camp.
Bet you will.
You won't have to pay a dime. They'll be out of your hair for a week. They'll be with lots of great kids. Stop me whenever you've had all you want. I mean, but they do sell that. And yeah. what they're not telling you, I mean, the movie Jesus Camp, I'm not far enough along in my
that is PPS. Scary.
I can't watch it. I'm not there yet. But yeah. it's real. I mean, we had very specific ways of indoctrinating children.
Yes.
We knew what we were doing.
Yes.
We were pros. And
it's targeted.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's not innocuous. You think, it's summer camp. They'll have a great time. It may be loaded more heavily.
Oh, yes.
Well, and isn't that common that it's sold as a sort of, it's laid back. Yeah. Maybe talk about Jesus, but a lot of the times once you get there, it's a little less carefree.
Oh, it's all totally loaded up.
Yeah.
Jesus.
It's for sure it is.
Wall to wall, top to bottom. That's all it's about. At least that's all it was in the camps that I sponsored and that our church participated in.
Well, I really want to thank you guys for being with me today on this topic.
Problem.
It was awesome.
It was great, yeah.
Yeah, I'm serious about those rings. Ask an Atheist is a production of NEDM Media. Our call screener today is Deanna Lyons. Our production assistant is Jerry Schiffelbein. My co-hosts this week are Rich Lyons and Libby Mistretta. I'm Beth Lehman. Please, if you have any questions or comments, catch us online at www.askanatheist.tv. And thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. We'll see you guys next week.
Keeping you informed, this is KLAY, Lakewood, Tacoma. Your conversation.